Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. One of my great sources for guests here on Common Threads are the publicists from all of the publishers around the country. So we are solicited on a regular basis, and people are sending us ideas by way of email, like, hey, would you think about this guest or think about that guest? And a lot of times they're right on the mark, meaning they understand the mission of Common Threads. But at the same time, I also get solicitations for books that have no business being on a show like this. They may be wonderful books, but I like to keep the mission of this program pretty straightforward. And if it isn't at least indirectly involving religion and spirituality, I tend to pass on those. Well, I got a solicitation on email recently from someone at HarperCollins about a book named Hiding Out, a memoir of drugs, deception, and double lives. So right there, I look at the title, I'm thinking, it's probably not a Common Threads kind of book. And I read a little bit about it. I see, a memoir of Catholic family dysfunction. Well, maybe. But then, reading on even more, I find that the father of this author, Tina Alexis Allen, was knighted by the church, by the Catholic Church. And it also indicates that this gentleman worked for the church and also may have been involved in some rather interesting parlays internationally. So I thought, okay, I'm going to give this one a go. So I received a copy of the book, and I'm thinking, yeah, this is definitely Common Threads material. Because as people who listen to this on a regular basis know, we are more than happy to talk about both the light side and the dark side of spiritual and religious traditions. And this has, you're just going to have to listen. That's all. So as I mentioned, the author of Hiding Out is Tina Alexis Allen. She is a GLAAD Award-nominated actress, producer, scriptwriter, and playwright. She's a cast member of the TV series Outsiders on WGN America, and co-starred in the feature films Moving Mountains and Tom's Dilemma, as well as the web series Looking for Kathleen. Ellen is the co-founder of Gina Raffaella Jewelry's mission-driven No More Violence collection, and we have her here right now on Common Threads. Tina, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That was a great introduction, and I love that the book had you stumped a little bit by the title.
Yes, absolutely. The title and the initial description. You're absolutely correct. It did stump me, I'm really, and so much of the time. You know how it is when you wake up in the morning and get to your computer and you find out you have 175 emails staring at you. And whoever wants your attention better grab you quick. For whatever reason, well, I just go on.
I was just going to say, it's interesting when we were thinking about subtitles for Hiding Out, we knew we had the right title in Hiding Out. It is the perfect title for the book, as your listeners will come to find out once they read it. But devotion was one of the D's we had thought about. So drugs, deception, and double lives is where we landed. But we actually had thought about maybe putting devotion, because there is such a heavy emphasis on spirituality and specifically the Catholic faith in my book, because I did grow up the youngest of 13 in an extremely devout Catholic family.
I am aware of that, and you are correct. If the word devotion was there, I would have taken a second look even quicker. But but things worked out. Yeah. So let's talk about this. This childhood of yours, it's absolutely fascinating. And even though the main reason that you are on this show right now is because of your father and his relationship with the church, I'm happy to discuss all the other fascinating and interesting elements of your life so far. Some very tragic, but some very empowering and inspiring, I must say. As you say, you grew up family of 13 kids. You were the youngest.
Yep.
very Catholic household. Was it a happy childhood in the early years? That is to say, maybe 5, 6, 7. I know things got a little complicated later on, but growing up, I mean, you know, were you spoiled by all the attention of older brothers and sisters and all of that? The baby of the family, was that pretty pleasant?
I think those early few years were pleasant. I think it was a busy, sometimes chaotic household, but you know, a lot of love, a lot of singing. Christmas was, you can imagine, filled with excitement, and 13 kids preparing for big holidays. It's fun. Easter. All of that was, I do have fond memories. And I also recall, even in school, I went to Catholic school as my siblings did. I even remember in school, I can remember specifics of teachers, and, I was a good student and I was a good kid. And of course that changed. And that's part of the reason I was able to sort of track more specifically where things started to go wrong in my childhood. Almost like looking at where I started getting in trouble in school, where I started getting sent home, where I started acting out. And, as I got to be an adult, looking back on that, I went, oh, okay. So that is exactly what I remember, where things went wrong. But there was a lot of love and joy. And my dad was definitely a taskmaster. He could be rageful. So when he was home and not traveling, it was, a different kind of household, in the sense that people, I think, probably walked on eggshells a bit, like what kind of mood is he going to be in? My mother was very gentle, very loving, so she balanced things out. Overall, I do remember early years, a lot of fun, and yes, probably spoiled with attention.
And so at some point, for instance, when you say you were getting in trouble, when you look back now, do you have the realization that, I was acting out because this was going on at home? Dad started.
Absolutely.
So when you were really little, you don't have a lot of memories of a rageful father early on, but perhaps later?
I think what happened is, and I'm not sure if I, maybe blocked some of those more unpleasant things out. I don't have a whole lot of memory of sort of 5, 6. I mean, I kind of remember school even more so than I do home, which is interesting. But I do know from people telling me, for example, like I remember one of my sister-in-laws told me a story of when I was like 5 and they couldn't find me. It was a dinner table. Everybody was at the table, and I was hiding under the table. And she asked me why I was under there. My father had just gotten home from work, and that's where he could be, especially if he had been drinking. I think probably where he would be, blow up or be rageful. I don't remember it specifically at that age, but she told me I was hiding under there. And when she asked me why I was under the table, I said, because I didn't have socks on my feet. And my father was adamant that we were not allowed to walk around the house without either slippers or socks or something on our feet. It was just one of his things. So to me, I guess that's an example of, I probably did know, but I don't have a lot of memories of it, but I've been told.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
In reading about how you describe your father, the term cognitive dissonance keeps ringing in my head. Talk about a man with a couple of different lives.
Go ahead.
No, he was a very devout Catholic. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned in the book that he was considering the priesthood.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He spoke and read Latin. He was a model for mid-century Roman Catholicism, at least on
the
cover.
But absolutely. On the surface, yes. If you were to have met my father, you would say he's one of the holiest men you've ever met. And daily mass, leading us in the rosary after dinner every night on our knees, crucifixes all over the house, religious icons from all over the world, packed on every shelf and bookcase. And my mother was also very devout. They met in the Holy Land. They met in Jerusalem during World War II, where they both, he was a British officer, she was an American nurse. They were passing through. He was thinking about becoming a priest. He literally took her on a walk of the Stations of the Cross, and we call that their first date, which we jokingly say is kind of heavy for a first date. but nevertheless, they were both very devout. And so, yes, very much anyone who knew him would think that. And yet, of course, the double lives, one of which I learned when I was 18, it's on the book cover, so I'm not, this isn't a spoiler, is that he basically came out to me. He suspected that I was, at the time, which I was, secretly dating a woman. I had been with men and women and girls and boys, if you will, at that point in my life. But at 18, I was with a woman, and he suspected and mentioned it, and that scared me to death, knowing my father as I did in a limited way. And then he proceeded to come out to us and say that he had buried his lover in the war prior to meeting my mother, and his name was Omar. So essentially my father was living a double life, having, you know, relationships with men, being with men, including my godfather, which was a mind blower. And that's, you know, that's a lot to consolidate. Obviously the church has very specific feelings and doctrine about homosexuality. And of course, in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, you know, obviously we were in a different time where that was even more difficult to live that lifestyle. So I think my father felt, whatever his nature was, that he didn't have permission to pursue that. And yet he was certainly acting out, which was a complicated thing to find out when I was 18, still young. And yet, what makes this story, I think, very unique and even more complicated is, as I've already described my father to you and your listeners, as I viewed him to that point, I was scared of him. I didn't particularly like him. He wasn't very kind to my mother often. He clearly was having a lot of internal turmoil, which I didn't understand, but I'm sure this had a lot to do with it. But you're a kid and you see what you see, and that's all you know. But the bottom line is that when he did come out to me and share this secret with me, and we began a whole, you know, that's like in chapter two. So that's just the tip of the iceberg of my book, as you know, is just the beginning of this roller coaster. In a way, it brought us into a relationship we never had.
Oh, a tremendous, yes, yes. It's pretty joyful to read. how this all developed. And I've got a couple of questions about that specifically, but before I get to them, I simply want to remind people that you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Tina Alexis Allen. She's the author of Hiding Out, A Memoir of Drugs, Deception, and Double Lives. So my first question about that coming out event, you were at a country club, is that correct? Or the university club?
Yeah, the University Club is an exclusive all men's, although women are allowed in the dining room. I think they've changed that hopefully by now. But yeah, it was an exclusive men's club on DuPont, right off DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. So it wasn't a country club exactly, but it was an exclusive private club.
Right. And he sees
that my father belonged to.
Yes. Yes. And I think I've heard that not only are women allowed in the dining room, they're also allowed in the kitchen.
Exactly. Yeah.
He sees you with this woman. He suspects his gaydar goes off, basically.
Exactly. Exactly. Well said.
and he basically in a very friendly way confronts you. He gets you to admit that this isn't just a friend. This is your lover.
Yeah. Yes. And I had been so, this is the 80s. It's still a scary time to be out. I was not out in any way, shape, or form about this relationship with my family or really anyone, certainly not at school or anything. And I was hiding, hence the one of the reasons for that title, Hiding Out. There's a lot of hiding going on, and then we come out. So
right.
There's a lot of that dichotomy that we're living. So learning this from him and the way he did it, you're absolutely right. As I describe, is incredibly gentle and loving, which was also new.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So my question is, and you may not be able to answer it, but speculate as best you can. What if mm-hmm. you had a man on your arm, and your father was sensing that same chemistry? That this is definitely, she's not just with a friend; she's with a lover. Do you have mm-hmm. any idea how he might have reacted?
Well, I was 18, so I think in terms of just, you know, having a boyfriend, I think it would have been fine. I don't think we would have gone on our journey together, if that's what you mean. I think that when he found, he found a confidant in me. He found, you know, a patriot, if you will. He found a drinking buddy, a club goer, somebody to confide in. And that changed everything. So I think if I was with a man, it would have been fine. There would have been, you know, I'm sure he would have been kind and generous, but I don't think we would have, you know, taken off on a jet plane together,
sure.
which is what pretty much happens in the book,
sure.
literally and figuratively.
And my other question, did he ever discuss with you how he was able to make his lifestyle work in the context of the church? Was he able to find some sort of ecclesiastical loophole that he thought mm-hmm. he was slipping through, so to speak? All of a sudden, this imagery isn't working for
yeah.
me. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Absolutely. I know exactly what you're asking. And I would say the short answer is no, we didn't discuss it. But I will say in an indirect way, I think he knew, and he's written me a number of letters over the years that were indirectly answering it, which is that he said God loves you infinitely and more than I ever could and will always love you. And I think in his heart of hearts, he realized or believed that God is love and that God loves everyone. Isn't determined by your sexuality. That said, in terms of consolidating the lying, because it's not that he was living free, but of course he also grew up in a time, let's be honest, where, you know, he was beat up literally. And I know this for a fact, it happened to him twice. I was too young, but I've heard this since from an older cousin who is aware of it. And so, you know, he was also growing up in a time where if he was to do that, he would literally, you know, be outed from the church, you know, ostracized, I'm sure, lose his business. You know, the church wanted him to have a family. And I mean, he was the best Catholic I think he could be. Only I mean that in the sense of he was trying to be a good Catholic. He got married. He stayed married. He had a lot of kids. What he couldn't do was resist his nature. And that's the way I would frame it. That's my interpretation. I don't know it to be fact. I just can tell you what I witnessed and what I have gleaned from letters and from the way he spoke. You know, I think it ate him up inside. I think he understood that. It's not like I think he wanted to be lying. I don't think he wanted to be living a double life in the sense of if maybe he could choose. And I think that drive for him to be with men was so strong that he didn't choose. Now, I also want to add that he was also with and shared with me, he had been not only intimate, but also had a lot of priests around. They were around our house. We had a lot of nuns too, but that he was in a relationship with or had been with. I don't know, relationship may be too strong. So I also feel that that's complicated because now you've got people in your life that are of the church kind of doing the same thing. And we know that exists in the church. Let's all just call it what it is. We know there are active homosexuals in the priesthood. We know some are not active. We know there's a big issue at the Vatican with a lot of this stuff because it's been all over the papers for many years. And so I don't know. I know he went to Mass every day, and I know he was a complicated guy, and I'm sure this life of lies and his secret work for the church, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit, made him who he was. I'm sure it contributed to the choices, him drinking a lot.
I was going to say the alcoholism might very well be at least partially inspired by this cognitive dissonance, this leading opposite lives in one.
Yeah. You know, one of the reasons I wrote Hiding Out, and, you know, I'm the youngest of 13, so there's a lot of opinions about among 13 people of how much to share, how much not to share. Obviously, I've made a choice to focus on my dad's relationship was completely unique to my siblings. None of them had this kind of relationship with him. I made this decision to write a book as bold as my book is, as graphic as my book is, as specific and transparent for maybe that exact reason, because in a way my dad couldn't or chose not to. You could go either way, I suppose. But I think he lived of a time where he felt it wasn't possible. And I don't think there would be a big argument for me about that if you wanted to be devoted to the church, other than be abstinent, which he could have done, he didn't. But if that is really what you want in your life, or you have a longing or drive for that, and you've made that choice, then I think that lying, there's a big price to pay. And I'm sure the alcoholism, the raging, you know, the verbal abuse of my mother, that stuff is somebody who's in enormous amount of pain and conflicted. That's how I see it.
Certainly.
And of course, I forgive him and my family for everything. I'm not, this isn't a revenge book. It's a turning on the lights book, as I like to say. It's a transparent book.
And you've made this, well, you have a one-woman show. And from what I understand, much of what is in that show comes from this book.
Actually, the reverse. I have done two solo shows in my acting career. The last one I did was about 5 years ago. I performed it off-Broadway. I workshopped it out in Los Angeles. It was seen by a book agent in L.A. who had suggested I write the book. Now, the show itself is quite interesting in the sense that I made a conscious choice to explore this question that you just asked me, among others, about my dad. And the way that I was going to answer that was to play him, was to become him, was to write and perform a show as him and only him. So I'm not actually in that show. It's just me playing a man who is my father. And I wanted to explore those things, like, how did he consolidate? You know, was his devotion to the church authentic, or was it a cover? You know, was having a Catholic travel agency as a career something he really wanted, or something he felt he should do? And ended up, having played my dad and quote unquote tried to walk in his shoes, is I started to see him as a man and not just my dad, which I think every adult child should have that goal in life, because I think it's a really transformative experience to see your parents as human beings and not just parents. I think it's our obligation to get there. As kids, we can't, but as adults, I think we should. And that happened for me. And also, I realized that he was authentically devoted to the church. Now, he didn't do it perfectly, don't get me wrong. I understand what the church wants and asks of its followers. That said, the lying probably didn't settle well with him and the double lives. But I think he was so devoted that he stuck with it. And he did a lot of good work in the world. You know, he created pilgrimages for the sick and handicapped. Back in the 50s, Life magazine did a story where he was taking hundreds of, you know, wheelchair and stretcher cases, if you will, to Lourdes for, you know, a week or two. And this was all done nonprofit. And he continued that for 50 years. So I could tell you many stories of things like that. But he was a devoted Christian in that sense.
It's very clear in your book. We're running close to the wire here, but very quickly, the fact that this book is out, does that mean that your one-woman shows are no longer a priority because now much of the story is here, or are you open to continuing that?
I would be open to doing my the last show where I played my father. I definitely have had offers to do it. I've been so busy with this book tour, and the book is just a few weeks old. So, you know, I'm still sort of in the thick of it, but I'm open to doing that show. It was called Secrets of a Holy Father. And, I sort of switched gears and went to the book because it was basically presented to me as an opportunity. And I knew I always wanted to write a book, and it sort of just came up fast. And there I was writing a book.
Well, we're glad you did. Tina, we are at the end of this episode, but there's so much more to talk about. I hope you'll be able to join us next week.
Absolutely. Can't wait.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today, Tina Alexis Allen. She's the author of Hiding Out, a memoir of drugs, deception, and double lives. Please join us again next week here on Common Threads.